Do you want to cool down a bit?
No, I'm fine. I'm fine. Oh my god.
Okay. So, we're going to dive straight in. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Tea with Lily. I'm your host, Lily Mensah Yeboah, and I'm here with Lord Byron Tully, all the way from LA in California, and he's graced us with his presence. That's another first for us. It's a transatlantic hookup. Byron is the author of The Old Money Book, which says live well while spending less, and we're going to talk about that. So, Lord Byron, how are you?
I'm well, Lily. How are you doing?
I'm very well. I'm going to ask you about the weather in LA.
It's delightful. It's paradise.
Oh, I was hoping you'd lie so I wouldn't feel too jealous.
No, we have a cool breeze blowing today, and it's sunny, and it's beautiful.
Okay, well, London is quite dreary. Last week was nice. This week, we're not going to be so lucky. Let's hear a little bit about the brand name Byron. Byron, I read somewhere that you were grandson of a publisher.
Yeah, my grandfather was a newspaper publisher with newspapers in Oklahoma and Texas. My mother says that's where the writing comes from, that we have ink running through our veins instead of blood. And my father worked in the oil industry in Houston. And so it really, I've been really fortunate to have some good examples set as far as the work ethic and being smart with finances and things like that. So I was lucky in that regard. But that's basically my background.
Okay. That's great. Thank you. So Byron, what was the reason for writing The Old Money Book?
I was talking with friends of mine and looking at reports that were online and in newspapers about how Americans were earning a good living throughout their careers and having a lot of material possessions, having a lot of material comforts, but at the end of their careers or whenever they decided to try and retire, they were not in a position to. There's like 12 or 15% of Americans are really right now financially prepared to retire. They were living a lifestyle that was based on being a consumer rather than being an investor. You find out that people have a nice house, have a nice car, have a nice wardrobe, but they're living paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
And that I think was something that I felt like I really had to address from my experience and my family's experience as far as the way we lived. It was just something I felt like needed to get out there to people about how to adopt these priorities and kind of step into this culture where you could live well, spend less money, and really have something to show for your efforts at the end of your career and give your children educational opportunities. These people live in a big home and they're doing well, and their kids are having to take out student loans. And so they're saddled with that on piano on their back when they graduate from college. They've already got a mortgage and it's their student loan debt.
Yeah. That's great because that comes through very clearly in the book, which we'll talk about that. I just want to get a feel. I just want to get a flavor of the old money guy, or shall I say the old money?
The old money guy and the old money gal.
Yeah. OMG. I love it.
You're not going to be able to recognize an OMG. Although once you start to, you read the book and you start talking with people, like I interviewed a lot of people in Boston and out here in Los Angeles and in New York City and down in Texas. It's not like the preppy handbook where you can go out and buy a polo shirt and buy some khakis and buy some penny loafers and say, okay, now I'm old money.
Now I'm old money. It's a way of life, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's a lifestyle. Yeah, it's a way of life. So what's the secret about this sort of writing the books, the screenplays, songs? What's the secret behind that?
It's really a compulsion. My mother, my background is that we have family that have always been writers and in the newspaper business. But it's really just something that I'm passionate about. I was an only child, and so I spent a lot of time by myself and having to entertain myself. My parents were both working very long hours when I was growing up. And so writing just kind of came naturally. It was something that I had a very vivid imagination. And so it never really subsided as I went through school.
Okay.
But I've made a living in a certain sense where I've stacked money aside from my screenplay options, and I'm working on some songs, getting those published. And with the sales of the Old Money book, I'm piecing together a good living. I feel like I have a good quality of life, which is another thing I emphasize in the book, as opposed to a standard of living.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm very happy about. I have, you know, full relationships with people, with friends. I've been married to the same woman for a couple of decades, which is a Los Angeles record.
And so, well, congratulations. That's several marriages in LA terms.
Yeah, that's several marriages in LA. I feel like I kind of live this life that is not based on material possessions. It's based more on doing things, having experiences, working hard, and really nourishing the relationships that I have.
What so far has been the highlight of your career?
The biggest highlight, I have to say, is a personal one. You know, the book is selling well. It's selling all over the world in different languages.
Yes, I looked on Amazon, and got some really, really good reviews.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, it's been very well received. I think we have like 4.5 out of 5 stars on Amazon's and Goodreads. We've gotten good reviews on the Goodreads.com site. But I think the biggest reward for me so far has been when I receive emails from people who have bought the book and read it, and they hit me back on the blog, the Old Money Book blog, and say, hey, you know, I really enjoyed your book. I'm going to give it to my children for them to read. And these are the values that I want to pass on to my children. And that's been the biggest, most touching thing. I thought it would be, the royalties that come in, they get deposited in the bank, but those are nice. But what means the most is, you know, the guy bought it, one of his sons was getting married, and he bought 25 or 30 copies, and he gave them to all the bridesmaids, he gave them to the groomsmen.
Wow.
He gave them to the whole party and said, you know, it's like being a babysitter. Here, I'm gonna let you into my child's life. That's pretty touching, and that's kind of been the highlight.
Great. Looking back, when you left high school, what did you want to be? Imagine that today you just finished high school. You guys graduated high school, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we don't wait. We wait until we finish university or college.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but you start from kindergarten, don't you? In terms of graduation.
Yeah, they started that trend. I don't like it. I think you should graduate from high school and college, and that's
okay.
It. And I like your idea of just graduate from college. But, you know, when I graduated from high school, I had an idea that I was going to do something creative. Growing up in Houston, no one really knew what a screenwriter was. They went to movies, but as a career, that didn't really come into play. A lot of people tried to steer me toward advertising. And journalism, which journalism was an obvious choice given my family background.
Yeah.
But I think as far as advice I would have given myself graduating from high school, as I look back, I would have said to myself to make sure that you don't think you can do it by yourself. You really need a network of friends and colleagues that you can interact with so that you can accomplish some of the goals, whatever goals they are. You don't succeed in a vacuum. You know, I've had a lot of mentors. You got to get a gang around you.
Yeah.
A very supportive crew. Because as a writer or in any other thing that you're doing in life, you're going to need somebody to commiserate with you when things are dark and it looks hopeless. And you're also going to need people who have been there through the long haul to celebrate with you when things are good.
So what you would have said to your 16-year-old self or 17-year-old self would have been, surround yourself with good people.
Yeah, don't try and do it alone.
Don't
try and do it alone. You're gonna have to put in more work than anybody else, but the resources are there. And when you reach out to somebody, you know, I rarely reach out to other people without offering to do a favor for them first.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a very good policy, is if you help other people accomplish their goals, a large percentage of them are going to reach back out to you and go, hey, look, talk to this guy, or, email this person and see what they can do to help you. But it's got to be reciprocal. It's got to flow. And it has to come from a place of genuine generosity.
This is Tea with Lily, and I'm here with Byron Tully, a.k.a. Lord Byron, all the way from L.A., to talk about his book, The Old Money Book, and some of the projects in the pipeline. Are you going to tell me some other stuff that you're doing, or are you going to go all old money on me? I'm all secretive.
No, we're working on financing a film project for an independent film. And we're working on that, working on acquiring the English language rights to a very successful German television series.
Okay.
So we hope to have that finalized sometime in August. And we're also working on adapting an animated children's book series for television. So we've got a few projects in the hopper.
So, Byron, let's delve into the book properly. It's got two sections. You have the core values of old money, which is it 8 sections, health, education, all the way down to privacy, etiquette. And the second bit is how old money does it. That looks about at your clothes, diction and grammar and housing and cars and travel and all those things. Things that we should know, but either we've been taught and we've forgotten, or perhaps sometimes we've never been taught, we don't even know how to do it.
In the introduction of the book, I explain, and kind of shed a light on two different guys. The first guy, and they both inherit $1 million from an uncle. The first guy goes out and he buys a new car and a new house. And he buys his mom a new house and he has a big time and he tells all his friends about it. And then a few months later, he realizes that he's got some tax liabilities, and what would be a dream sequence for most people to inherit £1 million or $1 million turns into a nightmare. And then the second scenario, the young man inherits $1 million, and he goes and invites his friends to the pub and buys a round of drinks and just tells them that that he got a bonus at work. He doesn't make any big deal about it. And then he goes off to his accountant and has a long chat with his accountant about what his tax liability is, what some of his options are. He starts to consider, what are my options? How can I invest this money to make sure that I'm financially secure for the rest of my life? And so these two scenarios, the same thing happens with lottery winners.
Yeah.
You see these two scenarios where some people go off the rails and then some people take a step back and handle it, because when you inherit a large amount of money or you have a sudden financial windfall, it's a little emotionally disturbing. It can upset your equilibrium.
Yeah.
Because your routine and what's possible and the options you have change overnight.
Mm-hmm.
You suddenly have the option to buy a new car or buy a lot of the things that you think will make you happy. And people, you know, it happens every day out here in Los Angeles. Someone sells a screenplay, somebody makes a movie, somebody gets a, you know, gets cast as the lead role in a TV series, and the money starts pouring in, and they get very upset about a year into it because they bought everything and done everything that's supposed to make them happy. And generally they're no happier than they were before this happened.
Okay. Yeah.
And they get really angry. I've seen people throw Rolex watches against the wall and shatter them into a million pieces. They were upset and they had called me because I'd written the old money book, and they had called me and shown me all this, the girlfriend that's half their age and half their IQ that were all supposed to make them happy.
Can you set the buck again? The girlfriend that's done what?
The girlfriend that's half their age and half their IQ.
Yeah.
And all these things that are in the house with the swimming pool and everything, and they're not happy. You know, they're no happier. They thought that all this was going to make them happy, and it did for a little while. But when it wears off,
yeah,
you know, you're left being the same person that you are. And so I put the values, you know, I structured this book intentionally where I put the core values of old money first.
Yeah.
In the book, because you'll figure out the stuff in the second half.
Yeah.
If you get the first half,
if you get
the core values, then what I talk about and how money does it, about wearing traditional clothing in the sense of kind of preppy, it's khakis, and you know, I don't want to say, you know, this is an important part of it, but you'll end up wearing low key clothing that doesn't broadcast how much money you have or don't have.
Yeah.
It makes sense because it doesn't go out of style. It's not faddish. You don't waste your money on cheap clothing. For men, you end up buying shoes that you wear 10 and 20 years.
Yeah.
And you just have them resold and rehealed and taken care of. And so, but I put the core values first because the how you do things and how you spend your money will make sense only after you adopt these core values. It starts off with health and education, family, these things that are kind of, it doesn't matter how much money comes in or how much money goes out. If you've got these values kind of laid down and you get a grip on them, you're going to be able to ride these waves that life hands everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
That's really the deal.
I mean, I've looked at a couple of bits that I'd like to tease out slightly. And some of the things that I found quite, well, as a parent, I like the bit where, you know, parenting says, if you notice something unusual behavior in children, get in their face and stay there until you get to the bottom of it.
I know that's not a problem for you.
No, that's not a problem for me. Another thing, though, is the diction. You ask somebody how they are and they say, I'm good. I hate that. I hate that with a passion. What is I'm good?
I'm well, yeah, I'm fine, thank you. And that one's a pet peeve of mine too. And when you say thank you to someone in Los Angeles, they say, you know, for bringing you your food or refilling your water glass or you know, making you a cup of coffee or whatever they're doing, they say no problem. And I want to say, I'm glad it's not a problem because I'm giving you money to do it.
Uh-oh.
But I don't say that. That's, you know, just my pet peeve.
Yeah, of course.
My head. To say you're welcome is so much more endearing. And the Europeans are so good with it. You know, I spent some time in France and somebody did something for me and I said, thank you so much. And they said, my pleasure. And
yes.
I thought, oh my gosh, how wonderful.
And there's also something to do. He says, rushing to buy a house is very middle class. It's like fixing an emotional problem with a financial decision. Tell us more.
Yeah, most, I mean, it's very, in 2007, it became very apparent with the financial crisis over here that most Americans were not in any position to be buying houses the way they were buying them.
Yeah.
But I don't, I mean, and this is one of the few pieces of real financial advice that I give in the book, because everybody's situation is so different. But I don't feel like most people, when they're single and they've got a job and they're established, they're saving money, maybe they get married. I don't think the first thing that they should do is go out and buy a house. I think that they should save their money, continue renting, and if they absolutely must buy a piece of real estate, I think that they should buy a piece of real estate that has a section of it that can be rented out and where you have rental income. And my family has done this for generations where we've had our residences, but you have sources of income outside your job.
Which yeah, is always. Yeah.
Because you have to feed it every month. You have to pay that mortgage every month. You have to do the maintenance every month. You have to do all these things every month, and that house doesn't generate an income. Even though it may appreciate in value over time, and it may not, is the other side of it. But you can have a piece of property that generates an income through having an apartment over the garage, or maybe it's a four-unit apartment and you live in one unit and rent out three units.
Yeah, yeah.
If you have something like that, it can depreciate in value. The people still have to pay the rent.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, I think being a landlord for a lot of people is a good business school. You learn a lot of people. You learn a lot about managing your money. You become a small business owner.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a choice a lot of people should consider. And the other side of it is, you don't have to buy a house. You can have money. Just cash or, you know, very liquid investments that are conservative, earning money and growing on the side that you can have for graduate school or to set up a trust fund for your children or a college fund for your children. You know, there's a lot of things that you could do with that money rather than giving money to a bank every month.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for that. I like the don't drink and drive, call a cab because it's cheaper than bail. Some really good sound bites there. And, this one. It says, flirting is fine, but just keep it between the lines. What's your version of between the lines? How does that work?
My version is everybody, when you meet somebody of the opposite sex or the same sex, whatever sex you're attracted to, there's a line, and I think everybody knows it. It's a little culturally dependent. Maybe it's different in the UK. Maybe it's different in Africa. Maybe it's different in Mexico or the United States. But there's a line where you're enjoying someone else's company aside from your spouse, and they're enjoying your company. But there's a line that you go, okay, this is far enough, and we've had a good time, and now I'm going to go home with the person I came here with.
Okay. All right.
That's really keeping it between the lines. I mean, I have a lot of friends that I've had for decades that I went to school with, and we get together and we have a lot of Guinness and everybody's laughing and joking.
A lot of Guinness? You have Guinness in America?
Oh yes. They bring it over here.
Okay, because I remember when I was in the States, it was the imported stuff that we eat, and it was so expensive.
Yeah, it's not a cheap drink over here.
Well, old money would appreciate that, right?
You can't. Yeah.
If you're drinking, you have to drink expensive stuff.
Old money hates paying retail for liquor.
Do you make your own moonshine?
we love house parties where everybody goes down to the liquor store, buys the booze from the liquor store, and then has a gallon of booze for, you know, $30. But paying retail, going off and paying $30 for a drink at a club, you're not going to find a lot of old money people doing that.
Okay.
They just hate it.
Okay, that's good. Now, there's, in terms of attire and stuff like that, there's a bit where you say, no starch, please. I don't get it. Please explain. What am I supposed to do with my linen clothes in the summer?
Yeah, no, you want to look nice. And you look nice. You look lovely. But, you know, that's one of the little silly things that I put in there. But you'll notice that for men and women, you're going to see old money guys and gals that are dressed in natural fabrics, 100% yeah. cotton, 100% wool, and that's pretty much it. And the fabrics are going to be pretty comfortable. They're going to be clean. They may be frayed. You know, there's some old money guys I know that will wear khakis until the cuff just looks like fringe on a sofa. It's yeah. just ragged. But, you know, you're just going to invest in your clothes rather than running off to every sale that H&S has, you know, four times a year.
Yeah.
But that's really the old money philosophy, is wear things that are versatile. You know, for guys, you can wear a button-down blue collar shirt. You can wear it with a suit. You can wear it with jeans. You know, you can wear it with a blazer. You can wear it with a tie. It all goes back to the private schools that we had here in America, and the one, you know, like Harrow, and where their school uniforms. It's yeah. khakis, it's a blazer, and that just kind of carried into what has become preppy. And that's basically what it is. It's just traditional clothing that you wear not to attract attention to yourself, but just to be well-dressed no matter what you're doing.
Okay. White jeans look best on slender women. Really?
Yeah, that's the truth.
Okay, I've got a confession. I don't own a pair of white jeans, so that means I'm not slender. I do not own a pair. There's one that which I didn't get the memo for, which says, if you can't walk in the shoes, don't wear the shoes.
I see so many girls almost falling over in Beverly Hills here because
yeah.
they're wearing platform shoes that they can't walk in. It's just, they're too high. They
yeah.
look like they ran into Elton John's closet back in the 1970s and stole these platform shoes.
Yeah.
And they just don't work. So I think it's important to look good. It's important to be stylish,
yeah,
but not faddish and not trendy. The important thing is to constantly be working on something you're passionate about, constantly improving your education,
yeah.
constantly reaching out and meeting new people. And if you're comfortable and happy and you look good and you're healthy, that's gonna play a much more important role than having the latest fashions.
Okay. Thank you for that. Now, let's talk a little bit about your screenplays and what perhaps your typical client might look like in terms of the work that you do outside of writing books.
Okay. My typical client is a film producer.
A film producer, okay.
And what they're looking for is film producer. They have access to money. They have access to actors who can get a film made in the studio system. And so what I have to present to them is a screenplay that's commercial enough so that audiences, when it's marketed to audiences online and on television, you know, with trailers, so it's commercial enough that audiences know kind of the movie that they're going to go see. They know it's an action film. They know it's a drama. They know a comedy. But it's original enough that it's something we haven't quite seen before.
Okay.
And so those two things, that's what I have to present to a movie producer and say, hey, this is commercial, but it's smart, but it's original. And so that's the fine line that I'm walking, you know, in getting material to producers and getting films made.
Okay.
And that's the... For a client, in talking about terms of a client, that's my client.
Okay, that's great. And so what's your guilty pleasure, Lord Byron?
Oh, you know, I can just sit and read. I read about a book a week, and I don't know if I really feel guilty about it. But and the other thing is I really have, you know, once I've put in my time and really done the work that I set up to do myself for a given day or week, that's my guilty pleasure, is being able to just not do anything.
I'll have to learn how to do that. So does all you have to teach me how to do that, not to do anything. Does old money do charity, and if so, which charities, or is it social? Is it one of those bad things to ask old money about what charity, what charitable stuff they do?
Yeah, I think you're gonna find. You're going to find a lot of old money people just do things anonymously.
Yeah.
Because especially if it goes beyond three generations, there's a family foundation set up, and you're never going to hear about money that they've given to charity. Here in Los Angeles or any other major city in America, if you go to the local hospital in the lobby, they'll have a donor's wall up there. And you'll see the names of people who have money to build a wing on the hospital, or contribute to the children's ward, or something of that nature, or to contribute to cancer research. And you'll see names up there. Those people, they really don't care to have it broadcast, but that's enough recognition for them.
Yeah.
Maybe you're watching Masterpiece Theater, and you see the foundations that support public television. You know, Heifer is really important, and Habitat for Humanity that we just gave a bunch of furniture to and a bunch of building supplies. We did a remodel here on the property, and we had a bunch of building supplies left over, and Habitat for Humanity came by and said, "Hey, we can use those." And we said, "Take them." And so you have to continue giving back, because I mean, I've been lucky. I was born into a good family, and my parents didn't lock me in the attic.
So, Lord Byron, how do our listeners connect with you if they want to get further advice on how to live well for less? Is that how it goes? No, I got it wrong. How do you say it?
Living better while spending less.
Living better while spending less. Okay.
If people want to follow my thoughts and kind of a regular posting, I have the blog, The Old Money Book. .com, mm-hmm. Which is the blog, and so every few days there's a new post on there, and people really enjoy reading the post since 2013.
Okay.
So that's been going on for a couple of years, and if people want, and people can reach me personally, people do reach out to me when they have a financial situation where they've ended up with an inheritance or some windfall, to just kind of get a grip. They've read the book sometimes, sometimes not. And they kind of, I'll chat with them and say, hey, you know, here's some things to think about.
Yeah.
And because you don't want to regret, you know, if you get a big windfall of cash, that happens for some people several times in their lifetime, but most of the time it's just once in a lifetime thing. You have to max out that opportunity.
Yeah. Okay. So that's at, what's the email address to reach you on?
They can reach me by email at byrontully@gmail.com, or just reach me through the blog, which is www.theoldmoneybook.com.
Okay, what about your Twitter handle?
I am on Twitter with The Old Money Book.
Okay.
And a lot of people catch the blog post. The blog posts go out on Twitter. They also go to the Facebook page, The Old Money Book Facebook page. So.
Oh, okay. I'll follow that.
We cover social media. I managed to cover social media pretty well. without spending too much time online.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Old money doesn't do that.
Yeah, gotta be careful with that.
Yeah,
it's internet exposure.
Yeah, you did say something about cell phones are like the cigarettes of this generation because of
yeah. They are.
Okay, so finally, what are your top three tips for anybody, whether it's starting out a new life, whether it's inheritance, just, well, let's assume that somebody who's maybe late 20s to early 40s, that kind of age.
I would say that you have to know yourself. If you're very honest with yourself, and if you have a circle of friends who will give you feedback about yourself, that's the first thing to get a handle on what you can accomplish, what's important to you, and kind of how you can feel, you know, if you spend your life doing something, a vocation, or if you spend your life, you know, however you want to spend it, if at the end of it you feel like you've had a life well lived. Most of the people that psychologists talk to will say, when they're talking with people in their 70s and 80s and 90s, and they'll ask the people, what would you have done differently? Most people will say, I wish I'd left something behind for future generations, and I wish I'd taken more risk.
Oh,
those okay. are the two things that psychologists will tell you when they talk with people toward the end of their lives in their sunset years. So I would say, think about what you're going to leave behind, and open yourself up to taking more risk, because, you know, that's the fruit of the tree is out on a limb.
Okay. All right. So leave a legacy and take risks.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So the listeners, the Old Money book is on Kindle, people. I think they'll be ideal for those graduating or starting work, I think, or methinks. I've bought copies for my two adult children. I'm not saying that I have. I've just sent, annoyingly, Byron, I cannot send a Kindle present in the UK. So I've had to give Amazon vouchers so they can buy their own Kindles.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much, Leah. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome. I think it's a good book, and I'll get some for my nephews and nieces as well. I'm not saying they don't have any manners, but sometimes when it's said by somebody else, they do.
Yeah, that's one thing parents appreciate, is that I can say the same thing that they've been saying, but their children will listen to me.
Yeah. So, you know, hopefully they'll pick up one or two. Then, you know, when you think about Amazon, it's like four quid. It's not a lot. It's less than a fiver you can get. If you know, you can't even buy, I suppose, what do the kids eat that is so bad, like KFC. It's more KFC is more than £5 if you get a meal, I think. But you know, it might be the best present for your children. And thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us again. My next guest will be the zesty lady, Rachel McGuinness, who is passionate about a healthy lifestyle, and says that it's the easy way is being healthy because life is too short to be complicated. That's quite interesting. I'm looking forward to that. So, Lord Byron, thank you very much.
Thank you, Lily. I really enjoyed it.
Great.